It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosie.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosie.
No, it's not 1970s sports radio in New York. It's film, new intro, film, so welcome. Hello, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msosie@WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter at Matthew Sosie. Why are you laughing?
So I'm imagining sports radio in the
1970s.
The Bulls are rolling into town tonight.
Oh God, no! If the Bulls are rolling into town tonight, you would be on the floor for the Knicks. Bulls in the 70s, terrible. This show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes, and we have a blog which you can check out at
filmsociology.tumblr.com.
Man who really wants to know about 70s sports radio, you really don't. That's Kobe Slagle.
Hello, hello.
And joining me in studio, Nouveau's own Ed Johnson. Not a man who I've spent some quality Thursday mornings with the last couple of weeks. How you doing? Is his mic on? Will you?
Oh, my God, I can't be heard.
There we go.
Oh, he will be. Ed Johnson not will be heard.
Am I on now?
You are on now.
Oh, if you, God, folks, you missed something incredibly funny just a second ago.
Well, it's like if you flub a line, you just got to keep going. Sometimes that moment is gone.
Did you hear about the three-legged dog that walked into an old saloon in the Old West?
No, I have not.
Everyone turned and looked in this direction, and the dog said, "I'm looking for the man who shot my paw."
Your pledge dollars at work, ladies and gentlemen. Very good. Very good. By the way, thank you to my lovely wife, Lynn. We know her in the house party as Mrs. Sosie for the free voiceover work on the film show intro. So now you have a choice, Kobe. You can pick between Lynn or Scott Hoke's old traditional intro. So there's that.
Cool.
And I sound like an old person because, of course, the music is from the Warriors. And I will sit on the front stoop and tell the people that like 300. This was our generation's 300. Not as homoerotic and weirder costumes.
Come out and play.
That, and of course, that guy was David Patrick Kelly, a classically trained New York actor, mm-hmm. and got that role, and then became one of the Walter Hill players as the kind of sleazeball to go-to sleazeballs in the 80s.
Yeah,
and then on PBS, thank you PBS, like in the late 90s, there was a filmed production of Twelfth Night that Helen Hunt was in, but he played the fool. And it was actually cool to see him in a non-scuzzy role, so we like that very much.
Wasn't the star of the film like reclusive or he turned against the trade or something?
In The Warriors?
Yeah.
Michael Beck?
I think so, yeah.
Kobe, check up on actor Michael Beck. He played Swan in The Warriors. And of course we pay tribute to, I think it was Ron Wilson, the guy who played Cyrus, who passed a mm-hmm. couple of weeks back. So just a good film to watch. That's just I think that's a go-to. It's if it's on cable, you have to give yourself at least 20 or 30 minutes with that film.
You know, I'd like to see that again. I don't think I've seen it since then.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It was nerve-wracking. Of course, as a kid, this was the one of the representations of New York. New York in the 70s, well, let's see, you had Taxi Driver and, mm-hmm. and The Warriors and for historical purposes, The Wanderers. But, two gang films in 1979, and one by Philip Kaufman, the other by Walter Hill.
I got Michael Beck here. What are we looking for?
What check his, what's the last thing he's done?
Oh, man. A lot of TV, video game. There was a Warriors video game.
Yeah, nobody needs
apparently.
That.
I might have it mixed up with another Michael. There was some Michael who was the star of a film, and he turned his back on show business and all of that.
I see.
Maybe cult religion. I'm not sure what he was doing, but
okay. We'll work on that. Speaking of video games, yeah, Warriors beginning. You, Mr. Ott, you saw a film that was I didn't even know it was based on a video game until I actually read your capsule of the Need for Speed. And
yes.
It's not the making of Top Gun. It's cars going vroom vroom.
Oh, you didn't know that?
Did I stutter? No, Kobe. You've played said game?
Yeah, but the versions I played when I was a kid, like I was, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old. There's no. It's just a car racing game. There's no story.
Right.
I haven't played one.
So like,
in a long time.
For my age, it would be like trying to make a film out of Pole Position.
Well, Christopher Lloyd from the Film Yap.
Yes.
Wrote a really. His review just nailed it. I mean, he said, for any of you who like me played Need to Speed and said to myself, but what's the backstory on these people? What's that driver really long for?
Right.
This is the movie for you.
Wow, it clears all those questions up.
The car chases are good. When they're not chasing cars, it's not good, even with Aaron Paul.
There you go. And did I read? It's 2 hours and 10 minutes?
2 hours and 10 minutes.
Really?
Yeah.
Why? Plot
sure
stuff?
Not for the talking parts.
Lots of vroom vroom.
Oh, they tried to complicate the plot up. I think they thought maybe if they, you know, made it intricate, it might look substantial to somebody.
No, it's
it
so
didn't
bad.
Work.
No, that's a shame.
Evil, and I mean, Aaron Paul, I really like Aaron Paul. I'm rooting for him for anything, but this movie did nothing to further his cause.
Well, I guess it's a complete contrast to Breaking Bad, I guess.
Comparatively,
but that's about
so, yeah.
It. And The Check, so... Well, that's opening. Also opening is the film Gloria, which was the Chili's entry into the Academy Awards.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, boy, not screened for press. And Ed chose not to see it at 10:30 in the morning, as did I. And that's okay. Tyler Perry is a single mom's club, which apparently is going to be a series.
Really?
Well, that's what it says here. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't write that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you...
But is he going to follow it up with Single Moms Club 2, Still Single?
Still momming.
Still,
still clubbing.
Single mom goes Hawaii.
That's right. goes to Rome. And the thing is, Kobe, that's the beauty. If you like the Gidget series, you can get other actresses to play the single moms.
Yes, because there's lots of single
moms. There's lots of single moms. It's almost Batman-esque. You just throw in any old actor to play that role. So.
I hope this doesn't upset Dan Quayle.
Oh, yeah.
If it feels like Tyler Perry is glamorizing being a single mom.
Boy, do you remember Murphy Brown was
mm-hmm.
a national threat.
Yeah.
He's going to shake the foundation of as we the Murphy Brown and the Simpsons.
Oh, right. That's right.
And rap
Simpsons.
Music was going to destroy our inner core. It's 2014 and we're still here. Still smart aleck here. And other things. Okay. The thing I was talking to Ed before we went on. Normally, ladies and gentlemen, the film critic calendar would be right where we are right now. Would usually be a dry spot. We would be in the post Oscar lull. All the good grown up movies, if they haven't come to Indianapolis by now, then we're just going to wait on DVD, and we're just kind of waiting for summer. We're waiting for the big
right.
summer blockbusters, which is now going to be starting in May. So this is kind of a void area. However, this spring, late winter, early spring, has been really nice, and
mm-hmm.
not just because of the weather this week. Now, Ed mentioned off the Lego movie, which was a good start.
Right.
That was before the Oscars. But in the last couple of weeks, there have been one film every week that has really put a smile on our faces.
I know.
And 2 weeks ago, and you wrote about it in Nouveau, was the film, the French-Iranian drama, The Past.
Right.
Which is it still? Could you look up Landmark
yeah.
and see if that's still
it's
in?
It's still playing.
It is. Great. Because
and it's the mostly French Iranian.
Right. But I mean, as far as production.
Yeah.
It's from the writer and director who gave us the great divorce drama, A Separation, which it won Best Foreign Film. It got a Best Screenplay nomination and well deserved. So it's not just stuck in the foreign film
mm-hmm.
world. But anyway, a very tense drama with a lot of twists and turns. That, and it doesn't turn into August Osage County as far as a couple going through a divorce. It's not American Studio ugly. It's well, there is that. I think the studio put some ugly romance, you know, divorce out there, ugly breakup movie, which sounds like a parody film. But the twists and turns on this, especially with the children, and there's the wife of the mother's boyfriend who's in a coma, and how did she get there? I mean, just really, really well written turns and really well written plot things there, Kobe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, that was 2 weeks ago. That is still in theaters. Ed and I yesterday saw the latest Wes Anderson film, which opens next week. Hint, hint.
Oh.
If you could tell from the guttural noises, you'll hear the full review next week. But this week, and this actually happened. I didn't know anything about Tim's Vermeer going into it. In fact, I kind of forgot what the film was last week at 11 a.m. I was double checking because sometimes they're 10 and sometimes they're 11. No, kids' films on Saturdays are at 10.
Yeah,
our press screenings are at 11.
And anyway, there's nothing more fun than being in a packed theater at 10 o'clock with kids.
With the kids jacked up on popcorn and candy.
And indifferent as to what they see, as long as there's moving images and noise.
Right. Thanks, Mom and Dad. Mm. But anyway, we got to see, directed by Teller, narrated by Penn, but a film called Tim's Vermeer. And Ed, I'll let you take it because you have a really nice write up in it in Nouveau.
Vermeer is a French word for potholder, and Tim's a craftsman who makes his own potholders. He's got a little shop in Vermont, and Penn and Teller. I'm not really sure what drew their interest in the thing in the first place. I guess they just like artists and works, and that's really all there is to say about that.
And it's in French,
with Iranian subtitles.
Exactly.
Oddly enough,
yeah. This is based on a gentleman. It's Tim Jennison, who is an inventor, not an artist. That's the other thing that this film stresses.
Not an artist,
but an inventor, very successful inventor. If you look up his name, he has his thumbprint as far as computer imaging and cinema. You're welcome.
He made a huge, enough money that he can do whatever he fancies.
Seriously. Now, ponder that. There have been numerous bad sitcoms with this premise.
Mm-hmm.
He became obsessed with the artist Vermeer, best known for The Girl with the Pearl Earring, and made a discovery. The first third or half of the film is this kind of Da Vinci Code theory that Vermeer didn't use any sketching, didn't do any tracing, but painted pictures with some early form of an optical lens.
And you see, the thing with Vermeer is that his paintings are photorealistic, including things in the foreground being out of focus. Things that you wouldn't think of 150 years before modern photography.
Correct.
And so, and they knew from X-raying the canvases that he didn't sketch on them. So how did the guy do this? And that, as Matt said, the suspicion was that he had used lens, some sort of lens. And so Tim decides that he's going to figure it out to the point where he, using only the materials that Vermeer had to work with, is going to reproduce one of Vermeer's paintings. And remember, Tim is not an artist. Mm-hmm. He's not a painter. And it's the journey.
Yeah, he uses what looks like the little mirror on a stick that you have that they have at the dentist's office, and he uses it, and he does a couple of portraits, a couple of small pictures, photo of his dad, and decides to tackle the Dutch painter's the music lesson, which takes thousands of days. The project from beginning to completion is now. Look, I'm telling you, we are telling you. I know this sounds like something that PBS would show at 3 o'clock in the morning. It's way, way more than that.
It really is.
There is this discovery and investigation. Like I said, it's kind of Da Vinci Code, only not silly, as to how this artist created this artwork. Then it's this guy, this inventor, trying to painstakingly recreate a painting. Try it sometime. See how long you last.
And he's working with camera obscura.
Right.
Which I still don't really understand. Every time I hear Camera Obscura, I just think of the band. You know?
the greatest Canadian rock band with the drummer from Arkansas.
But the camera obscura takes an image. If you have a small closed-in room and something outside that room, the camera obscura can project an image of that into the darkened room.
Mm-hmm.
Then Tim takes his camera, or his mirror, and flips the image upside, because when it projects it into the room, it projects it upside down. Oh, by the way, don't worry about spoiler alerts here. The treat of the film
you mean
is...
He doesn't die for a few days?
Yeah, well, it's called Tim's Vermeer.
Right.
I mean, it's possessive. It's
right.
It's happened. But it we're talking... This is a film that doesn't just deal with obsession and determination. It takes you in.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it doesn't feel like something that plays at 3 a.m.
Right.
It takes you in. We have three... The theoretical stage and the background stage. Then once he decides he thinks he knows how he could do it, then we have the stage where he tries to reproduce the scene that was in the painting.
Not just the painting, the room, mm-hmm. the setting in
the
a little
figures.
In a warehouse in Texas.
And he's determined that he's going to make everything himself. He's going to grind, he's going to make the paint. He's going to grind.
That's right.
Everything. And that's the part where I got a little itchy until I realized that, or squirmy. I mean, actually not itchy. That implies
yeah, please don't be itchy.
No. Or scratchy. But I realized after a little bit of squirming that it was necessary to see how obsessed he was.
How far.
Because this was a film about him, too, not Vermeer, simply Vermeer. So we have... The theory in the background section of the film, the part of the film where he tries to, or he recreates the scene so he has something to work from, and then we have the painting, and the painting part's substantial.
It is. I remember saying initially after the screen was over, it was like one half Da Vinci Code, and the other half was like a painting version of Fitzcarraldo. He was literally trying. Not literally. It was him trying to recreate a painting down to the details, the fabric on a rug. It reminded me of Kinski wanting to drag an opera house through the Amazon.
His work on the rug is unbelievable. That section is just
weeks.
Unbelievable.
It takes weeks, and there's moments. I mean, I was on the edge of my seat. I was. I know it sounds like a cliche, but the fact that he made a mistake where he mm-hmm. had to rub something out when the optical was knocked over. I mean, there was just little tiny things. If you've ever tried to create something, whether it's a painting or food or theater or writing or gardening, whatever, you sometimes get so into your head that the tiniest thing could set you off. And you see this task take a toll on this man.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's at times gut-wrenching to watch him go through this. But I say gut-wrench not in the Lars von Trier way, but in a really, I mean, a fascinating way like you said, there's no spoiler alert on this, but the payoff at the end emotionally
uh-huh.
and physically is outstanding.
And there were two books written, I believe, in 2001 about Vermeer and the whole idea of how we captured those images on canvas, those photorealistic images. And Tim takes his work, and he consults with the guys that wrote the book.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a moment where Tim's finished product he shares with the authors of the book, or the books, and... It's just such a great thing to watch.
Mm-hmm.
This movie takes you into the creative process.
Yes.
Even more surprising, it has Penn Jillette, and it's not terrifically annoying. He's, how Penn is the loudmouth, boisterous member of Penn and Teller. You know how you watch him for about 30 seconds, and then you just want to slap him? You don't want to hear. He's taken all of that and put it on the shelf, and he's just being sincere with his friend.
Yeah, it's a friend, and he's a narrator, and he's an observer, and Teller's the director on this.
Uh-huh.
And I don't remember if they've done short films.
I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either. But anyway, I know they've both directed. But yeah, they're both a part of this. And I think, obviously, they're hoping that their fan base will open up a wider audience for this film. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even if you find Penn and Teller irritating, you should go see this.
You really should, because I find them tremendous, or I find mostly Penn tremendously irritating, and it didn't make a difference, not in the movie at all. He was just a good, he was a good buddy.
Yeah.
You know?
So anyway, that is opened in theaters. Do we have Sir Ben screen? Yeah,
yes,
that's good.
Yes.
So that's definitely worth checking out. It's fine. I was telling Ed yesterday, I'm directing a play which has three more performances tonight and two tomorrow of Born Yesterday at Scottish Rite. And this is the second time where I got to see a film about the creative process while I was working on something. And watching this man sweat and kvetch and go through all this, I'm like, okay, I just got a little community theater play. I'm doing all right. The first time it happened was the second play I had ever directed. I did the Greek tragedy Medea, date play of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And one afternoon before an evening rehearsal, I saw the documentary about Terry Gilliam called Lost in La Mancha, which was, I think, his second attempt to make The Death of Don Quixote,
right,
where they had $20 million. They had a Don Quixote who could not be insured and got injured. There was floods, and they lost sets. And I thought, I'm making a play for $130. I think I can do it. So it was very inspirational.
I've seen so many films that have tried to present the writing process, and they're just boring. This is one of the few things I've ever seen where we go into the creative process, and it's riveting.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it really is.
Treat.
And some snarky person will say that it's like watching paint dry. You can punch him in the throat and tell him film sociology sent you. So there's you too, Kobe. Kobe.
Tim's Vermeer.
Yes. Tim's Vermeer. Go check it out. Is that Landmark? We'd love for it to get a wider release. Of course, I like lots of things, but that's another time, another place. So, Cope, what
the
is
the past is also showing it
still when there? Is The Wind Rises still there? You're right there.
Yes, as well for The Wind Rises.
How about Her?
Mm-hmm.
You can read Ed's wonderful capsule review of that in Nouveau. And has the hate mail stopped over your joke on Son of God?
My Son of God. yeah, there's been nothing in the last week. But
may I, in your 2-star review near the bottom, you go through sensitive souls should be aware that the crucifixion gets pretty grisly. All caps. Spoiler alert: Jesus gets killed for a little while.
I just wanted to give fair warning.
Absolutely. I'm totally with you on that. And some people took umbrage with this. Well, that's a shame.
I wasn't making fun of Jesus.
No, it's true.
Mm-hmm.
It happened. A little bit.
A little bit.
A little bit. So, Cobe, what is happening at the IMA tomorrow? Now, the winter film series is done, but there is still occasional films every couple of weeks at the IMA. And if you are a fan of Japanese animation,
right,
2:00. I know you want to be at the IMA. Mm-hmm. Where are they showing?
My Neighbor Totoro.
I can hear my daughter squealing with delight because she wants to see that on the big screen. She's only seen Ponyo and I think Arrietty, The Secret of Arrietty on the big screen. So
I want to admit here how ignorant I am.
Hmm.
When Kobe said that just now, I thought he was talking about someone that lived close to him.
No.
And I'm not making a joke.
Well,
I thought this was going to be the beginning of an anecdote.
Nope. Just something at the IMA.
Yes.
What's happening at your alma mater?
IU Cinema tonight, 6:30, Spatial Underground Films. That's not special, like with a twang. That's
Thank you.
Yes.
Yes. Don't speak American, all right?
Spatial Underground Films. And then follow that up tonight, 9:30, Like Father, Like Son, Foreign Language Drama, 2014. Like Father, Like Son, again tomorrow at 3:00, followed by Paper Moon from 1973 at 6:30.
With film sociology guest Peter Bogdanovich. Yeah, I do that too.
Mm-hmm. And continuing in the Art and Legacy of Roger Corman series at IU Cinema tomorrow night, 9:30 from 1968, Targets.
With Boris Karloff.
Oh.
Nice. It's a kind of Charles Whitman-esque story, and Karloff, I think, is on screen for about 15 minutes because Bogdanovich was a big fan. An interesting low-budget film in the early career of a guy who would become one of the more influential directors of the 1970s.
Like Father, Like Son again at 3 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, followed by War Horse, the National Theater Live at 6:30.
The National Spiel, not the Steven Spielberg thing with the horse jumping in
no.
the foxhole.
No, no,
these
no,
are,
no, no, no.
These are actors in horse marionettes.
Yes,
good. And then they're on spring break next week, right?
I don't know. I don't know when the spring break is.
I think spring. I think we're right in the middle of spring break right now.
Okay.
I know what.
I know Ball State was off this week.
Butler is off. We're going to see Johnny Clegg and Ladysmith Black Mambazo tonight.
Nice.
Very cool. You've seen him before, right?
I saw Ladysmith Black Mambazo at Clues Hall. We got our tickets really early. Front row center. Have I told you this story?
No, but not on the show. Go
okay,
for it.
All right. So we have these tickets, and we're front row center, and I've listened to Ladysmith Black Mambazo is a choral music group from Africa, and most of their songs are in Zulu. I had listened to their records enough that on a number of the songs I could sing along phonetically. Now, I didn't know what they were saying, but I could sing along phonetically. I'm doing that, not silently. I'm doing that while the group's performing, and it's just wonderful. Sold out Clues Hall is so great. Joseph Shabalala, the leader of the group, comes walking down in front of the audience, which puts him immediately in front of me. I'm mouthing the words, and he leans his head down and turns his ear in my direction, so I raise my voice up just enough so he can hear. He smiles, takes my hand, leads me on the stage, and I got to finish the song with the group.
Nice.
And at the end of the song, we all had our arms behind each other's backs, and he leaned over and he said, "When I tap your back, we bow." And we all bowed in unison when he tapped my back, and then he led me back to my seat and performing with them in front of sold-out Clues. It was so, so great.
Top that, fools. Can't. I'm emceeing tonight at the Jazz Kitchen. Dave Spector, Chicago blues jazz guitarist, is going to be in town.
Cool.
So lots of stuff going on in the big city. Mm-hmm. That's why you have to pay for parking at night and on Saturday. You should put on your big city pants. Are you really wawing that, Hamilton County guy?
Mm-hmm.
No. Okay. we'll take a short break. Oh, apparently at Cinema Grill, the dine-in movie theater is open, so I guess you can get food into the theater. I think is how it goes.
What?
No, wait. It's Latitude 39. No. I was thinking of the place on the west side that we met at. That's a different place.
Studio Movie Grill.
Yeah, this is not it. This is Latitude 39 on out by.
That's up at Keystone.
Up at Keystone.
Okay.
We'll have to investigate that. All right. Let's take a short break.
Very cool place.
We'll get our bearings. We'll talk about what's on DVD and Blu-ray. We have a dead person we like. We go into the archives, and we got Ed Johnson out hanging out. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
Is any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs.
You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
just go. Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store.
Blockbuster Video. Wow, what a difference.
Well, in case you didn't see it, here it is again.
Hello? My name is F. Murray Abraham. This is Film Sociology, WFYI, Indianapolis.
Welcome back to Film Sociology. I'm your host, Matthew Sosi, hanging out with Ed Johnson out of Nuvo and Kobe Slagle. And I play the F. Murray Abraham ID because, one, I'm incredibly self-indulgent. Two, not too many shows have F. Murray Abraham IDs.
That's right.
But three, I've gotten to see him in the last couple of weeks, which is really nice because he's a working actor. There is no such thing as an Oscar curse. Yeah, he won for Amadeus back in 1984. He's been doing TV and movies and the stage. He's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I bring this up because he has a really nice role in The Great Budapest Hotel,
yes,
which opens next week. He also has a small one-scene wonder, really good role, in the top film on DVD and Blu-ray this week, the latest from the Coen brothers, Inside Llewyn Davis, where he plays a club owner in Chicago who tells our hero, the title role, the Coen brothers' interpretation of the brooding, self-loathing, starving artist whose own worst enemy is himself.
Absolutely.
And Murray tells him he's not it. If he could shave the beard, make it a goatee, and sing with a guy and a girl, he just might make it in this business.
I don't see any money there.
Yeah, so I don't see any money there.
Yeah.
That you really want to kick an artist down. That's the line to use. And this is a film that it's I think it got one nomination for sound mixing, and it's kind of it really divided the audiences, especially mm-hmm. among fans of the Coen brothers. And I saw it as a way. I saw it as the Coen brothers' version of the tortured artist that we've seen hundreds of times before, like Amadeus, like The Doors, like, you know, even if they're not films about him, like John Lennon and all the others that are, you know, brilliantly talented, but just people you don't want to spend time with ever. And mm-hmm. and Ed, you said, if I'm right, it was kind of a deromanticization of the folk scene. This is pre-Dylan.
The folk scene and the romance of the struggling artist.
Right.
It's not romantic.
No. You're on people's couches and you let out a cat and you get people pregnant when you really shouldn't. And it shows an artist warts and all.
Yeah, this is the guy that's getting beat up in the alley while Bob Dylan is making his debut in the club.
Right. So, but you like the film.
I did. I still. It's hard sometimes to tell people go see a film where you're going to be miserable most of the time, but they make you miserable really well. But yeah, I like the film.
I have no problem with telling people that. You should starve for your art watching. You should suffer sometimes. And by the way, we are not Lars von Trier. So, well, from what I've been told, Nymphomaniac is a slightly lighter return than, say, Antichrist and, oh gosh, what was the End of the World one he did?
That's really good.
Cope. Yep. Can you get offline for a minute?
What's up?
look up Lars von Trier. That's really going to bother me. It's the wedding, the end of the movie wedding move film with Kirsten Dunst.
It's pretty.
It was pretty interesting. It was pretty grim, and then it got even more grim with the end of the, because you have the wedding. It was a very stressful wedding with mm-hmm. broken family getting together, and you're not sure if this is a couple that's really going to make it. And then you have two siblings that are kind of sniffing at each other. Oh, and the world's coming to an end.
Yes, and look, there it is. Look at this guy. Oh yeah.
What, Kobe? Do we have a title? Go rattle off the directed titles at the top. There should be Nymphomaniac. I feel
one moment here. Let me get to the
Lars von Trier.
I've been getting the rules they've given the critics on Nymphomaniac on what we have to do to see the film. It's just even for
a lot of secret doors and little prohibitions.
Limited time that we can see it. We have to pick our time frame.
What is this like? It's like when we had what was it? We had an hour and a half window to not do the review of MacGruber.
That was great.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Inside the Critics Forum with Ed and I. But we get these emails when we attend screenings, and there's a thing like we've been alluding to it a little bit that we saw The Great Budapest Hotel, but we really can't talk about it until next week when it officially opens. Blah blah blah.
Right.
Unless you're the New York Times. screenings of the Chicago Tribune. Anyway, we will get these screenings, and they'll ask us politely to, you know, not post a review and not talk about it until said date.
Right.
We went to a Thursday night screening of MacGruber. Now, normally screenings are 7:30. I believe this one was at 8? Was it 8 or 9?
Yes, it was late.
It was a late show, not a midnight show, but we still, I think you got the email on this one.
They sent us a warning that we were not to write about it until the day of release, which was the next morning. So basically what they were informing the critics was, if you go see the late screening of the film and then afterwards drive really fast home, in that 45 minutes before it becomes midnight and okay to see the film, you can't write about it then. And they saw the need to tell us this.
Yep. Yeah. So, and they have sharpshooters outside our houses with the various studios. So, thank you for looking that up, Kobe. Melancholia. That was the title. Sorry, Mr. Von Trier. Don't yell at us.
This is the Von Trier End of the World film.
Right, with Kirsten Dunst. A film, this is so bad. One of my actors who was in Born Yesterday went to see that film only. The only thing she knew about it was that Kiefer Sutherland was in it.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's a bad move. That's, yeah. I wish you had told me ahead of time. I would have stopped you.
Oh.
Because by that rationale, she would have gone to see Pompeii. And that's, she and her husband were, well, blindsided to say the least, that it was not a Kiefer Sutherland film. He just happened to be in it.
Yeah, for a little bit.
You ever had that? You ever recommend something or why tell, has that ever happened to you?
Well, it's like going to Budapest Hotel because it's a Bill Murray movie.
Yeah, that's not the case. Don't do that. Please don't do that. Also out on DVD and Blu-ray this week, we have Out of the Furnace. And there's a couple of films that are out on DVD this week that I think there was kind of a little bit of a push for the end of the year awards.
Mm-hmm.
And then these were two films that just kind of, no, not really. And now Out of the Furnace had one of the most impressive casts, I think, of the year. This was from the director of Crazy Heart. This is Christian Bale, Casey Affleck, Willem Dafoe, Woody Harrelson, Forrest Whitaker, Sam Shepard, Zoe Zelandada.
Uh-huh.
I know I'm probably missing a couple other people. And it's set in Western Pennsylvania. It's a small mining town, and Bale is I think the Onion referred to Christian Bale's character as living the life of a Springsteen song, and his brother comes home from gets out of prison, and he winds up getting into the illegal fight game that's run by a snaggletooth Woody Harrelson. A really good cast, really solid cast. Not a whole lot of story there.
No.
I think they were just trying to carry it based on the impressive cast alone. Not so much on this one.
No.
So the other one is The Book Thief. This was a truly moving picture based on which I still don't know if this was a novel that was geared toward young readers or not. But apparently it's been too long since The Boy in the Striped Pajamas that we must have another film about the uprising of Nazi Germany. Now, it's not actually about the Holocaust, but it's about Nazi Germany and its impact on a town.
And it's heavy-handed.
It is a little okay, it's, I remember in your review in the Valley of Elah, and I still quote this, and I have to send you a royalty check every quarter, but you use the term, it's like getting hit in the head with a cardboard tube. That was for In the Valley of Elah. The Book Thief, a little harder too.
Yeah,
a little bit. You have Jeffrey Rush and Emily Watson who do a very good job with a different twist on the stock parents. It's a young girl who has been sent to a foster family. And, of course, during her time with the foster family, she's getting to know her foster parents is when the Nazi uprising is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then the title where she winds up confiscating as many books as she can because books equal freedom. So Rush and Watson are good on it. There's one moment in the film, and it's not just her running down the street telling people that she will never forget the as the Jews are getting pushed out of town. But there's a scene where the film where a book is knocked out of a kid's hand off a bridge and it falls into the water. This is in the dead of winter. And then the toe-headed neighbor kid of the little that's a friend with the blonde girl, he jumps into the water and retrieves the book. Apparently, Hitler was so powerful he banned hypothermia from Germany. It was very impressive. But no, I am not the former owner of the Cincinnati Reds. But yeah, little heavy-handed. There are other films about the uprising in Germany you could go check out. We're just saying. Also out on DVD and Blu-ray, and I saw this, and yeah, I can say I saw it. Although something came out of watching this, I saw the Jason Statham film Homefront.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I didn't.
This is, and that's why I'm here to tell it. No, it's the latest from Statham. What I didn't know was I'm watching it. He plays an ex law enforcement agent. There's a bust.
Does he fight?
There is a fight. There is a Statham-esque fight. There is a bus gone bad.
Okay.
And he gets out with his daughter, and he moves to Louisiana because the tax credits there are really good for filmmaking.
Right.
And he gets at odds with some of the local townies that are fronted by up-and-coming drug lord and performance artist James Franco.
Oh, good grief.
I think Franco does stuff for the hell of it. He's asked to do something and goes, why not? Soap opera, Academy Awards, chop your arm off in a movie, SNL, sure. So be the villain in a Jason Statham movie. Why not? It's like Michael Caine in On Deadly Ground. It's just kind of, sure. And Kate Bosworth is in this because you need flashbacks from the remake of Straw Dogs. And everyone's favorite bar wench, Winona Ryder, gets to play a Southern bar wench. And so I've explained it. So, yes, there is some butting of heads between the townies and our hero. And then the house gets invaded. And, of course, there's going to be shootouts and everything. Produced and co-written by Sylvester Stallone.
He is so...
Which makes me wonder, he realized he was too old to play this role and gave it to his fellow expendable to be in.
Wow.
So there you go.
So prolific.
I know. That's pledge dollars right here. Now, this film also helped me with one thing. I will give a note of this. This happens every now and then, where you finally have an actor's name committed to memory. This is when they grow in my own personal world. It's just like everybody else's personal world. They no longer become that guy or that lady.
Yeah.
And in the case of, and this happened in the span of about a week. So better late than never. But also playing the small town sheriff, who's in a little bit of cahoots with James Franco, is character actor Clancy Brown. Now, of course, you go, this is one of those guys, oh yeah, I've seen him do lots of stuff. He was best known early on as the sadistic guard in The Shawshank Redemption. But I do remember listening to, there was another film you and I saw last year, and I think my number one underrated film of last year, the Dennis Quaid farm drama At Any Price. And Clancy Brown has like a couple of really good scenes in it. They're small, as the small town rival seed salesman of Dennis Quaid. And on the commentary track, because yeah, I'm that guy, Quaid called Brown one of the finest actors in the business. So between all of that and Clancy Brown played the sheriff in the Lifetime remake of The Trip to Bountiful with Cicely Tyson.
Uh-huh.
He played the sheriff in that. So nice to see him not just playing sneering, stick-welding psychos.
Clancy was in Starship Troopers. And
yes, yeah.
I had a 20-minute interview with him set. He was in town to narrate something his sister was doing at the Circle Theater.
Okay.
And we were set up for a 20-minute interview, and then we started talking about Starship Troopers, and we went walking around downtown, the theater first and then downtown, arguing about Starship Troopers for about 2.5 hours.
And what was the argument?
I thought it sucked, and he didn't. And he'd read my review, and he wanted to go at it.
Wow.
And we both had a wonderful time arguing with each other. It was just really fun. Nice man, spirited debater. You know, it was a great afternoon. I remember it in him fondly. And it just was really swell. He couldn't believe some of the things I said, and I couldn't believe some of the things the film did.
you didn't get into the satire of the young Nazi movement.
No, well, part of what I did in the review was I took it at face value, and I did this because what's his name? I'm blanking on the guy's
Paul Verhoeven.
Paul Verhoeven told me to take it at face value.
Right.
I interviewed him, and he told me I am not being this is not a satire. I mean everything I'm saying. It's a World War II propaganda film, and I mean what I'm saying. So I took it at that level and reviewed it at that level. Clancy could not believe that I didn't see how funny it was. And I said, "It's not, if, as a comedy, it's a crummy comedy. And as a recreation of Nazi or a propaganda film, it's a crummy film. It's crummy in all sorts of levels." And we fought and fought.
And then the bug showed up.
And then And Neil Patrick Harris dressed as an SS guy from the future.
He still has that costume, I bet.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny. My senior year at Ball State, Paul Verhoeven came to speak. Mm-hmm. And this was right after Basic Instinct had come out. And they were showing his early films with Rutger Hauer. And I got to meet him. And it was the first time I really told Nars I didn't like his work. And I said, I didn't like Basic Instinct. And, of course, he asked why. And I said it was a two-hour... Oh, gosh, we're on radio. A two-hour bleep tease, and I already saw Vertigo. I don't need the chase scenes from Vertigo. And he goes, and he just kind of nodded and went, okay. You know, didn't throw a drink at me, didn't call me an idiot, just accepted it, and then just kind of casually moved on. So if you are critical and not a knucklehead, you can have a spirited debate and not mm-hmm. and not get punched in the face.
Yeah.
Or tell somebody online, you're dumb. Y-O-U-R, dumb. So, okay, those are the old titles. And, yes, welcome to the memorized brain of Matthew Soucy, Clancy Brown. Also on DVD and Blu-ray this week, and I don't know if this is making its Blu-ray debut, but I'll ask the question. If you have do you need a Blu-ray copy of the three James Dean films?
Rebel Without a Cause. I mean, I'd have as many copies of that as I could have in any form.
Okay, so I'm thinking unless there's some new features on it, probably not. So East of Eden, Rebel Without a Cause, and Giant.
Mm-hmm.
Got to see two of those on a movie theater in Anderson. So,
oh wow!
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
That's a good theater, if I remember the one.
The Paramount. Yes. So this was in college. So it was pretty good. New on Criterion, David Gordon Green's George Washington. This was before he started doing ridiculous pot and sword and sorcery films. Paul Schneider's in it. Your guy, Paul Schneider.
Yeah.
One of the staunch supporters of Paul Schneider, Ed Johnson Ott, ladies and gentlemen. Bright Star, the Jane Campion film. I remember that.
Paul Schneider, if you are a Parks and Recreation fan, he was Mark Brendanowitz for the first two seasons of the show. Then Bright Star went big, and he left the show with everyone saying how much they loved each other. He left the series to go pursue his career in films, and they brought in Adam Scott and Rob Lowe as his replacement. They brought back virtually every character that's ever appeared on that show has come for a callback at some point in the show. Nothing with Brendanowitz, Schneider's character, including when, what's his name? When the Rashida Jones left the series,
uh-huh.
They had a thing about her history of big boyfriends. They didn't even mention his name.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know what's going on there, but it's frustrating. Oof. He's too good to not be used.
Good actor. Very good actor. And by the way, Kobe,
mm-hmm.
Rashida's dad turns 81 this week.
I saw that.
Yeah. Nice parents.
A friend Quincy
Otis. Jones and Peggy Lipton, right?
Yeah, that's not a bad family right there.
That's a power couple.
That's
some quality
that's,
DNA.
There you go. Also out on Blu-ray this week from 1966, El Dorado with John Wayne, Robert Mitchum, and a young James Caan. Ed's eyes are almost falling out of his head. Now, I know usually when you're on, you of course pimp Local Hero or Wild in the Streets, which mm-hmm. were all floor, of course.
Uh-huh.
Was El Dorado something you had to see with your parents before Wild in the Streets?
I stayed as far away from John Wayne films as I could.
Okay.
When I grew up just at the right point that the only thing I associated him with was right-wing politics.
Okay.
And so I just stayed away from his work.
Well, and this was in a period where he had to share the bill with another actor for it to be a good film, I think.
Okay.
you know, this, Kirk Douglas in The War Wagon, Rock Hudson in The Undefeated, bet those on offstage.
Him and Ricky Nelson.
Him and Ricky Nelson, Katharine Hepburn and Rooster Cogburn. So there's also Hatari, if you want to see John Wayne running around Africa with the elephant music from Henry Mancini playing.
The one where he played Genghis Khan.
The Conqueror, which I am so happy to own on DVD. It was one of my most prized dork possessions is that I draw my sword, Turgatai. He's so not Genghis Khan. Kobe, the three of us had a better shot at playing Genghis Khan than John Wayne. So, also out on Blu-ray.
Kobe's dancing.
Those are his jazz hands. The Twilight Time has a limited edition because apparently only 3,000 film geeks can go and make a buster for this on Blu-ray. The original 1949 film All the King's Men, Broderick Crawford, Mercedes McCambridge, and not the remake. And also from 1977, Equus.
Wow.
Richard Burton, the last hurrah for Richard Burton before, because really he had a last hurrah when Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, and then there was 11 years of booze and fighting with Liz and bad films, and then he worked with the great Sidney Lumet to doing a play. It's funny, you mentioned War Horse, Kobe, they're showing the live National Theater production, you know, and of course this is also a film that had horse marionettes. Film Sociology, your home for horse marionette information. But the play and the film are considerably different, but it's young Peter Finch and old drawn out Richard Burton as a psychiatrist who's treating a young lad who's got a horse fixation.
Did the naked kid ever find work?
Peter Finch?
Was that the little naked guy? Was Peter Finch?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah, he's done stuff.
Okay.
I remember him popping up as one of the old fogies in The Greatest Game Ever Played, the Disney film with Shia LaBeouf. But yeah, he's been still working.
Okay, good for him.
And of course, the revival on Broadway was Daniel Radcliffe and Richard Griffiths. That was Daniel's, I think he did that before How to Succeed in Business. So for about 2 days, there was the entertainment press where, you know, Harry Potter naked. No, it's Daniel Radcliffe doing Equus.
Yeah.
Slight difference, slightly. Okay. We got a time for, do we have Chris Lloyd's famous introduction?
Oh, yes.
Cause
one,
we should,
one.
Do you have it? You weren't ready for that, were you?
I was not.
I know. So let's do it.
The annual show of dead people we like.
there's a pretty big one this week.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Yes.
Thank you, Smarmy Kobe. First off, we salute to actress Wendy Hughes, who died at the age of 61, who was one of the actresses in the Australian film boom in the 70s and 80s, not the Australian exploitation films. But she starred in films like My Brilliant Career, as well as My First Wife, Careful He Might Hear You, Warm Nights on a Slow-Moving Train. Then for you dorkier fans out there, she had a guest role in an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation as the love interest of Captain Picard. She played Lieutenant Commander Nella Darren.
Oh.
That lady. See, that lady, that guy information. So she also was in Paradise Road, the Glenn Close, Bruce Beresford female POW camp movie. And she was also in, because it meant the New York Times mentioned it, she appeared in Wild Orchid 2, Two Shades of Blue with Tom Skerritt. There you go. But My Brilliant Career, really good Gillian Armstrong film with Judy Davis and Sam Neill. Young Judy Davis and young Sam Neill.
Mm-hmm.
And also voiceover artist Hal Douglas has passed. And, well, we'll just let his voice speak for itself.
Two friends in love with the same woman, divided by an unjust war.
I wish to resign my commission.
Now, trust has become doubt. And the greatest adventure of their lives is about to begin. Paramount Pictures and Miramax Films present Heath Ledger.
I am responsible to my friend.
Wes Bentley.
You've gone down.
Kate Hudson.
Just come back to me safely.
In a story about honor.
I will protect you.
Friendship.
All that matters to me now.
And redemption. Four Feathers. Paul Morse was marrying into the perfect family.
Welcome to the club.
What could possibly go wrong?
I woke up this morning with a strange woman in my bed.
That's awesome, man. What are you complaining about?
MGM Pictures presents Jason Lee.
When she finds out about this, he's gonna call off the wedding.
Bullseye!
Julia Stiles.
You've got the smell of fear all over you. It smells like cheese.
In a comedy about how trying to do the right thing...
We're guys. It's a guy thing.
...can go so wrong. A guy thing.
K-19 is ready to fulfill her mission.
But in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean...
We're sitting on a pile of uranium.
...he was all that stood between the superpowers.
I know.
...and total nuclear war. Harrison Ford.
Our situation is desperate.
Liam Neeson.
No captain in the Soviet Navy has ever been faced with such decisions.
Some men pray for miracles.
I would rather die than abandon my men.
Heroes fight for them. This 4th of July weekend, they're back in business.
You're getting big. What would you been eating?
Back in action. Back in black. What? Men in Black 2.
This is the voiceover for Comedian Movie Trailer, take one.
In a world where laughter was king.
No in a world, Jack.
What do you mean, no in a world?
It's not that kind of movie.
Oh? Okay. In a land that...
No in a land either.
In a time...
I don't think so.
In a land before time.
It's about a comedian, Jack.
One man.
No.
When your life is no longer your own.
What does that mean?
When everything you know is wrong.
That's wrong.
In an outpost.
No.
On the edge of space.
No space.
A girl.
No.
Two girls.
No.
Now.
No.
More than ever.
Stop it.
A renegade cop.
I hate you.
A robot renegade cop.
You're fired.
You're fired.
No, you're actually fired.
I'm fired.
Get out of the booth, Jack.
No. I like it in here.
Okay, I got the clips from The Onion, and I know NPR played the last clip you heard was from the Jerry Seinfeld documentary Comedian. Mm-hmm. But I love the fact that in The Onion, the demo reel is trailer his voice trailers for The Four Feathers, A Guy Thing, K-19, and Men in Black 2, because he had to make those sound good.
And he did.
Thank you, Hal Douglas, so much.
What a great set of pipes.
Great pipes. And it's just, if you put that next to Dan LaFontaine, you can hear the difference.
Mm-hmm.
It's big, but they're two different vocal textures. So anyway, that's, and he actually did trailers for good films, but I just love that the demo reel was, that's just 8 hours of suck right there. That's
wow.
That's really bad. All right, we have time to go into the archives quickly, where people like 20th Century Fox and Warner Brothers and Sony want you to buy their movies online. You can't get them in stores, or as Kobe likes to put it.
Yeah, I'll burn it for like $5.
Only in this case, it's $20. And this was something I forgot was written in by Christopher Lloyd on the website The Film Yap. So you can go check out his write-up on it as well. But it's a Western from 1959 called Warlock. This was in a span of 4 days, I came across not one, but two films with Henry Fonda and Richard Widmark. The first being the 1968 cop potboiler Madigan, directed by Don Siegel. Mm-hmm. And this is one, it's called Warlock, directed by one of the guys that was on the list, Edward Dimitrik. And really? 2 minutes? Okay.
Yeah.
But it's different for Fonda. Fonda, who has jet black hair, died in this one, where he plays it's a town that's gone to hell. You have a town that's overrun by bandits. The law has run out, and the town hires a marshal, played by Fonda, with his sidekick, Anthony Quinn, to come and clean up the town. And, of course, it's kind of a mixed bag of reaction because he's a gunfighter, not a lawman.
Mm-hmm.
And Richard Widmark plays the brother of the gang that's been running the town, and he's starting to get second thoughts about what the gang is doing and starts to gravitate toward the side of the gray, not black and white, lawman. Also playing one of the gang members, DeForest Kelly from 1950. Yeah, it's fun watching character actors pop up. And it's smarter than your average Western. It's more than just, as I said, there's because you have Fonda, who by this time was, you know, one of the American icons of everything good, right, and the American way. And the fact that he's playing somebody that's got a little gray area to him where he's got his own set of rules and he's kind of selfish, but he's a gunfighter, but it's also Henry Fonda, so you're supposed to kind of root for him. But there's some interesting twists in it. There's a backstory with Anthony Quinn's character, who is his best friend, it's his sidekick, but he's got ulterior motives. And what happens with the Widmark character, it's more than just bad guys shooting up the good guys. So smarter than the average Western in the 1950s.
In a world where law was black and white, he was the shade of gray.
One shade, no other 49. All right, here's some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Ed, thanks for hanging out. We appreciate it.
Thanks for playing Zardoz.
Yep. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI HD, To the Point, WFYI.org. Later.